You're listening to 90.3 FM KRNU Lincoln from the University of Nebraska Lincoln in the College of Journalism and Mass Communications. I'm John Schrader. In this special episode of Watch the Media, students from the sports broadcasting class take over, sharing with us their personal podcasts. Taking center stage are Peter Krenzer, Bailey Landanger, and getting it started, Brent Bartels.
Man, this is it. At the time of this recording, this is the last project that I will turn in before I graduate from the University of Nebraska. Just 2.5 years ago, I stepped foot onto the concrete floor of the 17th and Vine parking garage for the first time. I took the elevator up to the 4th floor of Sandoz and began my college career. Writing this today, I'm in my bedroom in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, in the middle of a global pandemic just a few days from graduating. The world, like my college experience, has dramatically changed over the course of 2.5 years, but a few things haven't changed at all. My passion for baseball, my passion for broadcasting, and my passion for others, the few friends who I was lucky enough to share the world with at the University of Nebraska. There is nothing I care more about in this world than God, family, and baseball in that order. Baseball has been a part of my life for almost all of my life. My mom has hundreds of pictures and videos of my dad pitching me a soft plushy ball in the basement at 2 or 3 years old. I swear, I could have given Barry Bonds or Babe Ruth a run for their money. But fast forward to the high school days, and unfortunately, I knew I wasn't going to be able to play the game I loved much longer. Since I wasn't going to make it to the major leagues on the field, I wanted to focus on a career surrounding sports. I joined a broadcasting class my sophomore year of high school, and immediately knew this is exactly what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. I combined my love and passion for baseball with a new passion for broadcasting. About this time, I started looking for colleges. I knew I wanted to go to a Big Ten school with a good broadcasting program. I had heard about a new sports media program in Nebraska, fell in love with the campus, and 1 year later, I committed to the University of Nebraska to be a sports broadcaster. So that's how it started, and that same love and passion for both baseball and broadcasting continued into college. In my first year, I was thrown into broadcasting soccer matches, basketball games, and softball. Softball would be as close as I would get to calling baseball my first year, and boy was I bad at it, at least by my standards. Freshman year was wild in terms of moving away from home, being thrown into a new environment, and meeting so many new people who had similar interests to me. I joined the learning community and roomed with a student named Jeff Ekstrom. I thought his name was Geoff, and little did I know, he would eventually become one of my best friends and my favorite broadcasting partner. Our love and passion for sports created a bond that was deeper than just being a roommate. Why'd you want to be roommates with me, Jeff?
I don't know. No one else was available.
So. Oh my gosh, are you kidding me?
Obviously, with Brent working for Husker Vision, me working for KRNU and everything, we were heavily connected with Husker Sports, obviously living in the Lincoln community. But just being able to bond and talk about that on a daily basis, we played MLB The Show a lot, which I think was helped in us bonding over time. But it really was for our love of sports and being able to analyze it together in our different perspectives, how we analyzed teams' different moves, what they did, how the results were, just stuff like that. And that's kind of what, I guess, brought along our friendship.
That bond created through sports molded our chemistry for future broadcasts. I will never forget the first game Jeff and I broadcasted together. February 13th, 2019, men's basketball versus Minnesota.
So obviously, hanging out with each other on a daily basis, we kind of knew how we, like, even before, like, yeah, living together helped us kind of know how we talk, how we interact with one another. And I think that just naturally fit into when we first did a broadcast together, and that was spring semester of freshman year is Nebraska versus Minnesota. It actually came down, men's basketball game, came down to the wire, and Nebraska hit a couple free throws with like a few seconds left to win it. And so it was really quite a game to do first broadcast together. And I just think with us just being around each other on a daily basis, our just chemistry really ramped up and just fit smoothly when we first put on the mics together.
Unfortunately, Jeff and I didn't call very many games together throughout college, but the few we did call were special, including the one and only baseball game of my career.
So me and Brent called 4 games in total together. We called, of course, the way I mentioned, Nebraska men's basketball versus Minnesota. We did, for Karen and you once again, we did Nebraska versus Iowa women's basketball. And then for women's basketball again, our sophomore year, we did a Big Ten student U broadcast, Nebraska versus Southern. And then finally, the spring semester of our sophomore year, we called baseball game for Nebraska. And I felt like that baseball game was really the best broadcast that we had, because I'll be the first to admit, I'm not the greatest at color for basketball, but we both really knew the game for baseball. There wasn't really any lack of knowledge in terms of that. And then just having all that chemistry beforehand, I felt like the baseball game flowed really well. And we were able to go back and forth, having just a real nice conversation throughout the entire game.
Those 3 hours and 8 minutes that I spent in the booth will live with me forever. Going into spring 2020, I told my professor, John Schrader, I wanted to call as many baseball games as possible. But I had one request. I wanted to call a baseball game with Jeff before I graduated, and spring 2020 was going to be the last time I would get that opportunity. We were scheduled to call a game against Rutgers on the weekend of April 17th. Fortunately, the broadcasters for the March 8th game against Columbia backed out, and John needed 2 students to step in. John contacted me and asked if I would do the game with Jeff. And little did we know, just 4 days later, Nebraska would play its last baseball game of the season. And the Big Ten, along with every other conference, would cancel sports for the rest of the 2020 season due to the COVID-19 virus. The world works in mysterious ways. I got my dying wish, if you will. I got to call my first and final baseball game with someone who I had developed a strong connection with living together our freshman year. So many of my favorite college memories live at Haymarket Park, just outside of downtown Lincoln. When I decided to tour Nebraska my junior year, I went in the spring so I could watch a baseball game. Another one of my favorite memories inside Haymarket Park was March 6th, the 2020 home opener against Columbia. It was a beautiful, sun-filled Friday afternoon, and trust me, this day was marked in my calendar, circled in red, and bookmarked on my phone for months. However, this time it wasn't so much about the game itself, but to help one of my friends learn more about how baseball is played from a broadcasting perspective.
When I wanted to get into sports broadcasting and you like sat with me at the beginning of a baseball game and were explaining to me like all the positions, the calls, and like helping me write out notes so I could like review it. And I just like appreciated that so much, because I felt like up until that point, there was nobody that wanted to like invest time with me. Something that I really appreciated was your passion for the things that you do, but like belief in others as well.
Nicole Payne is one of my closest friends from the first day of college, and I will forever be thankful that she chose me as someone to help introduce her to the world of broadcasting baseball. Baseball will always have a special place in my heart, because it is a game that brings people together. These will always be some of my greatest memories from Nebraska. At the end of my sophomore year, COVID-19 continued to spread throughout the United States. I applied for a baseball broadcasting internship as the voice of the Sasquatch in the Expedition League, an up-and-coming collegiate woodbat summer league in the Midwest. Unfortunately, 4 of the 10 teams in the league canceled their season due to rising COVID-19 rates. The Spearfish Sasquatch were one of those teams. The news broke me. This was the last summer I had to get an internship before going out in the real world. I emailed every remaining team in the league to see if there was anything I could do to be a part of another franchise. And the night I sent those emails, I got one reply. It wasn't 20 minutes later before the Fremont Moo responded and offered me an assistant play-by-play internship alongside voice of Nebraska softball, Nate Rohr. The opportunity to work with a true professional in the broadcasting field, such as Nate, was incredible. And he said he expected a lot from me.
Well, you know, between our meeting in the office and just the emails and stuff that we had exchanged, I expected you to be very passionate about baseball. I expected you to have a good knowledge base about the game, both the mechanical aspects of the game and its history. I expected you to have some idea of how to broadcast a game, how to set up plays, things like that, and how to transmit it all through a broadcast.
Our chemistry grew as the season moved forward, and that helped our broadcast tremendously. But of course, Nate being a seasoned veteran, he had to have some fun with it.
I think it was pretty organic. It was developed somewhat with the bus rides and just interacting in the ballpark and things like that. I think if I was to typecast it, I think I was the older brother and you were the younger brother. And so when you would do something or say something that was a little silly or a little naive, I really did not hesitate to jump on it and turn the needle a little more and needle you. It was all in good fun. It was all in the service of the broadcast. But I think that was our chemistry, sort of the older brother, younger brother, where, you know, if I had a chance to jab you a little bit, I did. And especially when the situation of the game called for it. If it was a close game, I would let it slide. But if it's the fifth inning and it's a six-run game, I was swinging away.
Nate has almost 20 years of experience in broadcasting baseball, softball, and other sports. That knowledge and experience guided me and helped me understand what it was like to cover a team every single day.
This was your first time traveling with a team day in, day out. This was your first time riding with a team, being a voice of a team. I know you had done a year with the Canaries where you'd filled in, where you'd done home games, basically. But I think you learned it's an entirely different animal when you are there every single day, home and away, you know, 55 games in 60 days or whatever it was. So I think in that situation, because I'm quite a bit older than you, I've seen more than you, there were some clear points where I could needle you, where I could have some fun with you about things that maybe you didn't know, and maybe things that were holes in your experiences and things that I know because I'm older and have had more time to figure it out than you have. So it served our broadcast well because, like I said, I'm older than you. I've seen more than you. I don't mean any disrespect, but I'm over a decade older than you, so I've seen a bit.
I learned more from Nate in one summer than I could have ever imagined. Who knew you should keep an hourglass with you to remind the audience the score every 60 seconds? Yet with everything Nate taught me, he said I was able to teach him a thing or two as well.
I think the importance of multi-talent as far as social media, building the graphic stuff, the video stuff. I've always known that it's good to have hands in those camps and things like that, but to have a diversity of skills is so important now more than ever, and to where you've positioned yourself well with that. It's always a good reminder. I mean, I'd seen it, I knew it on some level, but to experience it is something different.
When I asked him about how he would describe my broadcast, Nate said it was relaxed, conversational, and loose. So why is that important?
Well, I think those things are important because it makes it a little more relatable broadcast for the listener. I think that sometimes, and this is a sin of which I'm guilty quite frequently, I think, we go into announcer mode where it's very stilted, where it doesn't sound like something actual human beings would say to each other. And I think you always did a good job of bringing yourself into the booth and making the person feel like they were sitting right next to you at the game, almost to a fault, really. I think you did a great job of letting your personality through the broadcast to where I think if people heard the broadcast, they got to know you pretty well, and it made it distinct.
Looking back on what was probably the craziest, busiest, most unusual summers of my life, in the middle of a global pandemic, I think working alongside Nate helped me advance my broadcasting career in more ways than one. I will always have a mentor and someone who cares as much about baseball, broadcasting, and doing hard work as I do.
Well, I think it's a sort of mentor-mentee relationship in a lot of ways. I know you've reached out to me in a couple of situations and asked for job advice or should I apply for this job? And you know, I think that's good. That's what I want to do is help you out and lean on my knowledge to hopefully straighten the path a little bit for you. So I think a lot of mentor-mentee and, you know, we'll occasionally reach out and needle each other if there's something that comes up, if something happens with the Twins or the Royals or things like that. But a lot of mentor-mentee. You'll have an ear to the ground, I'll have an ear to the ground. And you know, if I hear of something that makes sense for you, I'll sure pass it along, and hopefully you do the same for me. But just helping each other out as we're able and being another set of ears, another set of eyes, another set of contacts. If there's help I can provide to you, I'll do that. And I'm sure you'd do likewise if the opportunity comes up.
It's funny how sometimes you don't realize how good someone or something is until it's gone. I will forever be grateful for everything Nate shared with me in the summer of 2020. He took time to dedicate himself to me and my passions. He wanted to make me a better broadcaster and a better person. I will always remember the long bus rides, the endless hours of prep work, and the 2020 Expedition League Championship. But most importantly, I will remember everything Nate did to help me grow as a person. Broadcasting baseball will forever be my focus, my passion, and what drives me to work hard. There is only one thing I want more in this world than to eventually be a radio play-by-play voice for a Major League Baseball team. I want to be there for others. I want to help guide my friends and peers into something they can be as passionate about as I am with baseball. Broadcasting baseball means absolutely nothing to me if the people I care about can't enjoy their passions as well. In college, I was friendly to everyone. I genuinely liked everyone, but I didn't have that many friends. However, I can proudly say Jeff Ekstrom, Tyler Rice, and Nicole Payne broke those barriers and invited me into their lives. I could talk for hours about how each one of them mean the world to me. For all the times Jeff and I would play MLB The Show together and practice broadcasting games on a monitor before it was cool. The times Nicole and I would sit in the dining halls between classes and just laugh about life. All the fun times I had with Tyler, throwing plungers against the wall, watching Criminal Activity take place outside our back window, or doing Bible study together. Not only will these memories live on long after we all graduate from college and go out into the real world and live our own lives, but Jeff, Tyler, and Nicole helped me realize life is so good. These people are what drive me to live my passions. I hope I look back on this piece in 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, and remember what my life was like graduating college in a global pandemic, surrounded by all my friends. I asked Jeff, Tyler, and Nicole what they will remember about me, and here are their answers.
What you can really tell about good broadcasters right away, and you can't fake this, is just the passion that you have for the sport that you're calling. And right away, that was apparent with Brent. And obviously, he was good in all the technicalities of the game, with the vocabulary, and just being able to call the game in the moment. But it's the passion that stands out that really makes you take notice. Like, he's not going to be outworked. His passion is unmatched, and people are going to be able to tell that right away.
Brenton Bartels is a better broadcaster than Joe Buck. You never see the man sad, and you always like go out of your way to go and talk to somebody. He loves doing play-by-play more than anything. He actually hates ISO shooting, even though he volunteers for it. Knows the game of baseball maybe a little too well, which is a good thing. I don't know a lot of people who know the game as much as he does, except for, you know, umpires. He won't let you go a day without talking to you or seeing how you're doing.
I would say you're somebody who loves to be in the present moment. Like, you're always making the most out of everything. Like, I remember in Gary's class, you telling me about TikTok and how we needed to download TikTok and you were going to be so famous on it. And you're just like, have you downloaded TikTok yet? And I was like, no, I have not downloaded it. And then coronavirus happened like a year later, and that's what everyone was doing. And I just kind of laughed myself because I was like, Brent was totally on that wave. You're just somebody who's like a friend to everybody and so likable, because I was always so jealous. I'm like, how do all these professors love Brent? And everyone around you like knows who Brent is, and your ability to chase after like what you want. Like, you're a very driven person. You know what your passions are, and you have that like work ethic and ability to get there. So I would say, yeah, very hardworking and friendly and go-getter.
I can't thank these people enough, and so many others who helped me start my career as a sports broadcaster. Thank you to the University of Nebraska for 2.5 great years. I will forever be a Husker. Go Big Red.
From the studios of 90.3 FM, KRNU, this is a special episode of Watch the Media.
Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Main Event Podcast. My name is Peter Krenzer, host of the Main Event, a podcast where we talk just about everything professional wrestling. Today, we're going to be going over a few different things about the business itself, some misconceptions, casual fans, intense fans, just about anything you could think of. A little background on myself: I am a huge fan of the professional wrestling industry and have been for about as long as I can remember. A lot of people look at it as something that people commonly grow out of as they get older. That is not my situation. I am still a very avid fan of the product, and I watch multiple different promotions, multiple companies. It's one of my biggest passions. I love watching it. It brings me a lot of joy to watch it. But I think something that kind of plagues the industry is a lot of the misconceptions from outside people that maybe aren't as big of fans or don't really see the value in it. Or, you know, the very easy argument that, oh, it's fake, which has some truth to it, sure. But we'll get into later about why that isn't necessarily true and why it takes a lot more skill than people might realize. I have very fond memories growing up of watching this business on TV. It was one of the first things I was truly passionate about. I have great memories of going to live events with my father, friends of mine, and just enjoying myself and really just enjoying the moment. Because it's stuff like that that really, really got me into the industry to begin with. So without further ado, for our first interview of the day, I'll be sitting down with UNL student Tyler Cole, who is one of the biggest professional wrestling fans I know. So we'll be sitting down with him right now. All right, I'm sitting down now with Tyler Cole, a fellow professional wrestling connoisseur. Tyler, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So you are, aside from myself, the biggest pro wrestling fan that I know. What are your takes in general on the industry in 2020?
I think it's just like a cool entertainment thing. And I know it's kind of looked down upon by like the general masses a little bit, you know, as something kind of cheap. But I think it's a really cool like story, like way to tell stories, you know, and it's a really entertaining and fun way for like fans to engage with something, you know, rather than, it's a little different than a TV and a sports, as in you can kind of engage and kind of direct how it goes a little bit. And so I don't know, it's just another kind of hobby to have and another thing to keep myself up on.
So like you talked about how some people might look down on it. Do mm-hmm. What kind of misconceptions do you think comes with being involved with professional wrestling, or like just someone that might not know much about it?
I mean, I think that like most people will look at it and they're like, that's fake. And it's like, yeah, that's the point, you know. It's like a TV show. It's supposed to be fake, but it's still like it's still extremely impressive when you look at like what they're doing, you know, because it takes a lot of like athletical ability to do what they do. And when you mix that kind of athletics with a story, it gets really interesting. But I know most people, like, I watch wrestling with, they're just, like, kind of critiquing it from a outside point of view. Like, that's fake. And it's like, yeah, it's not supposed, they're not supposed to really hit each other.
That's one of the biggest problems I have, is when I just watch it with someone that's not used to it. Then yeah. It's just always the same story. Mm-hmm. Oh, this is fake. Like, I don't know how you watch. This is mm-hmm. corny. And, like, the business itself, I guess, is just kind of cheesy, mm-hmm. like, inherently. Yeah. It's not meant to be taken completely seriously mm-hmm. all the time. But I think the biggest misconception comes from people assuming that it takes zero athletic ability.
Yeah.
And that every aspect of it, they're just not taking any damage. Yeah. When in reality, I'd say, I don't know if everyone would agree with me on this, but I think that more often than not, your body's taking damage mm-hmm. than it isn't.
Well, it's also like they do it, I mean, not currently because of the pandemic, but they used to do it like 200 nights a year, you know? And so to go out for 20 minutes a night and like just kind of beat up your body for 200 days a year, you know, you look at football players, like, yeah, they're disciplined, but they only do it for 16 weeks out of a year, you know, where it's not a majority of the year, not even 200. It was usually like 300 days, you know, they have very minimal days off. And, you know, that's really hard to do as an athlete and to sacrifice that, you know?
Well, and you and I have gone to tons of shows. We've been to live national shows, but we've also been to the house shows, mm-hmm. which some people might not know about if they're casual towards the business, but you incorporate them working these non-televised house shows that it adds up over time.
Yeah. And it's like they aren't even doing it for anything other than just to entertain the people there, you know, just to entertain the people that come to pay it, even though it's not filmed or anything, you know, it's just another art form for people to enjoy.
What kind of got you into watching it and absorbing it when you started getting involved?
So my dad put it on one night, and when I was about 10, I think, and I was really intrigued by the idea of it, you know, because at the time you don't really know it's fake, but you're still able to suspend your disbelief as a child and kind of get sucked into it. And so that's what really kind of stuck with me, you know, is I could suspend my disbelief and I could really get behind the good guys and really hate the bad guys. But then as I got older, that kind of started to fall away a little bit. But when I got to a certain age and I got exposed to kind of the overall nature of the business and like the backstage of it and the back scenes of it, and kind of became to understood it from their perspective, that's when I got an entirely new perspective growing up and became to appreciate it even more than I did as a kid.
And just like as minimal a way as you could think of, mm-hmm. how would you explain the business to someone who had just started watching it, or someone who doesn't know much about it?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's these professionals and they go in and they're placed into scripted storylines basically, but each of the individuals is different in their own way as they're real individuals. So some of them have specific characters that they'll play, like The Rock. If you see him doing his thing in wrestling, he's very different than how he is now in like the Hollywood media, you know, like he's playing an exaggerated character of himself. But that's more entertaining to watch, you know, and then he'll wrestle someone who's lined up against him, who's typically a bad guy, you know, or a good guy if he's a bad guy, you know, and so they'll have a storyline or something.
All right. You got anything else you want to add on?
I don't think so.
All right. That was UNL student Tyler Cole, a fellow professional wrestling fan. Thank you, Tyler, for joining us.
You're welcome.
Up next, we're going to be talking a little broadcasting history within the business of professional wrestling. A great conversation there with Tyler, a huge fan of the business, as am I, so always a pleasure to talk to him about the world of professional wrestling. Moving on now, we'll be talking about the broadcasting history of the business, because a live show in the professional wrestling business has a lot of moving parts. It takes a lot of bodies to make it work. It takes a lot of work to make it look good. And at the end of the day, the action inside the ring is just a part of it. And in my opinion, the arguably just as important as the in-ring action is the broadcasting. And over the years, promotions like WWE, the recently created All Elite Wrestling, Impact, etc., they have been able to find some really talented broadcasters who are able to come in and really bring a match to life and sell it to the audience, which is not easy to do. A business like professional wrestling, a lot of the broadcasters prefer not to know the outcomes. They prefer not to know what's going to happen so that it can give off a more authentic feel when they're calling the matches, which is something I really appreciate. One of the all-time, if not the greatest broadcaster in the business, in my opinion, is J.R. Jim Ross. He just, growing up, hearing him call matches, it really just brought the whole thing to life for me. And it was just so incredible to hear what he brought to a show and a production. And as someone who's passionate about this business and the industry of broadcasting, it's just, it's really special to hear and know just how much of an impact he made on the business. One of the greatest wrestling matches, if not the greatest wrestling match, it is the greatest in my opinion. WrestleMania 25, The Undertaker versus Shawn Michaels. Even if you're not really a fan of the business, I highly encourage everyone to watch that match because it is top-tier wrestling. It is top-tier storytelling within the ring. But it is really what really makes it great is the broadcasting and the announcing by Jim Ross and Michael Cole. Jim Ross, just incredible on the mic. I'm about to play the soundbite from the end of the match when JR is calling the finish, and I just kind of want everyone listening to enjoy it because it is in my opinion one of the greatest calls of all time. So we're gonna listen to that right now.
Michaels in midair. Michaels caught. Michaels caught. Stone. Pile driver. My second. Michaels caught in midair. Two stone.
He did it.
17-0. 17-0.
This match. The Undertaker.
Like I said, that call is historic. It's I think it's so well done. It's JR, that whole match really just brought the whole thing to life and made it special. So up next, we're going to be having another sit-down interview with UNL student Michael Mikey Langford. He is a more casual fan of the industry, and he's going to give us some of his insights on what he thinks about it. Now I am sitting down with another UNL student, Mikey Langford. He is a more casual fan of the professional wrestling business. Michael, thank you for sitting down today.
Always a pleasure.
So you're familiar with professional wrestling. Would you say that it's something that you watch routinely or just kind of a more casual basis?
It's definitely a more casual basis. I have great friends that enjoy it, and it's definitely also a social experience for me watching it. But I definitely keep up with the current events of the entertainment.
What are some of the things about the industry that like stick out to you?
I think what sticks out to me more than anything is its ability to create characters and how those people can transform that into something else. I think if you look at the beginnings of, say, John Cena, like, you know, very kind of dorky wrestler, you know, he raps his intro song and all that, and now you see him like atop like the billboards, like with huge blockbuster movies. He's hilarious in comedies. He's an action star now. He's turned this thing as a WWE wrestler into a much bigger career, and he's known all over the world now.
And do you think that most wrestlers have that opportunity to break into a different kind of career if they're ready to stop performing as wrestlers?
I think if you have the right charisma, you can do that. I think obviously, you know, Dwayne Johnson, John Cena, those are like very much like once in a generation type of people. But you can see different things like, you know, for example, like The Mandalorian, a show on Disney Plus, you have Sasha Banks, a current female wrestler, you know, in an episode of the show and possibly going to be in more episodes. And, you know, she is not even the biggest star that the WWE has to offer, and she's already a part of a huge show like that.
And you said you're more casual when it comes to viewership and such, but do you think the business itself is kind of misconceived from outside perspectives?
Oh, hugely. It's I have had a lot of misconceptions about it when I first started watching it, and it definitely changed that. I think definitely like growing up, people like would deny, but like growing up when you're young, like, you know, like for me growing up with Undertaker, John Cena, you know, Randy Orton, Triple H, like you loved it. Like you had the video games, you had the shirts. And then as you get older, it's like, oh, it's fake, it's dorky. But then like you see them like do a move where it's like, you know, like someone will dive like 20 feet off the steel cage onto a table. Like
either way you spin that, that person jumped headfirst 20 foot off a cage into a table and hit another human being. Like, whatever way you spin that, that is 100, that happened. Someone would actually like dive headfirst 20 feet into another person.
Yeah, and that just kind of goes hand in hand with misconceptions about the athleticism it might require to be within that industry. Is there anything else you want to add on?
No, that's about it. Thank you for having me on.
All right, that was UNL student Mikey Langford joining me on the main event. Up next, we're going to be talking about the different promotions around the United States when it comes to the business. Good talk there with Mikey Langford about his feelings about the industry coming from a more casual perspective. Now we're going to be talking a little bit about promotions within the professional wrestling industry. And if you're unfamiliar, a promotion is essentially just a fancier word for company. So WWE, that is a company within the industry. AEW is a company within the industry. Those are promotions. And I feel like maybe sometimes the term promotions can be used in a negative context in terms of like intense competition. But I don't necessarily view it that way. I do think the primary purpose of having multiple promotions in the same country is to compete, to compete for ratings, ticket sales, just about any merch sales, just about everything else you could think of. But ultimately, while it is good to compete, I think that it could get looked at more negatively as, oh, this show's better, don't give this show a chance. This show has the better ratings, why even bother watching this show? I don't really buy into that. I've never bought into that. My perspective on it is that it is good to have multiple promotions because it can elevate the product as a whole. It elevates other shows. You see what another show is doing. It can give ideas. It can inspire creative teams. It can essentially just result in a better product on multiple shows. And in the end, the big winners would be the fans. They get to experience something new, something exciting, and they get to get a dose of multiple promotions and just enjoy the business. So that's kind of how I feel about promotions. It shouldn't be viewed more negatively. I think it's definitely a good thing to have multiple promotions. But anyways, up next, we'll be talking with my parents, actually, who more than anyone have seen my love and passion for this business grow over time. And so we'll be sitting down with them right now. I am now with my parents, Doug and Carrie Krenzer, who have seen me develop and watch wrestling from a young age. They aren't necessarily as diehard of fans as I am, but they do know all about it. Mom, what do you kind of think of it overall?
Well, I only know wrestling, pro wrestling, from watching it over Peter's shoulder. It's entertaining and perplexing, perhaps both at the same time. I've watched him love it as a little boy to grow up and be more of a discerning critic of it as he's gotten older. Certainly not anything that I find entertaining, but something that he has always found entertaining.
Yeah, that's just about what I figured you would say. And then I guess I'll ask Dad this one, since he's been to some of the shows with me. What has it been like for you, Dad, to like go to those live events and see those in person?
Well, I admit that I was skeptical in going to some of those shows. I didn't really understand the attraction behind professional wrestling. I didn't really understand if it was a sport or entertainment or both, but I will say that I ended up enjoying myself a lot more than I thought I would. The fans make it a very entertaining event. And the performers, especially seeing them do what they do live, it takes a lot more skill than I realized. And so while it's maybe not my top sporting or entertainment event, I have grown to appreciate it. And it's something that I've most importantly can enjoy spending a little time with my son doing it. So it's opened my eyes to some new things that I otherwise would not have even learned about or seen or experienced if you were not so passionate about it.
Well, there you go. Learning some new stuff about it. All right. Well,
that's right. Life's all about broadening your horizons, trying things out.
Well, that's pretty much all I had for you guys. So thank you for joining me on the main event today. And we'll head to the closing of the show right now.
And that is going to do it for today's episode of The Main Event, a professional wrestling fan's paradise. Had a lot of great discussions today, a lot of great insights from multiple people. Some big takeaways, I guess I would just advise, and this is, I tell this to a lot of people, if I had to give one piece of advice on the professional wrestling industry to someone, I would just say, if they're not really into it, they have misconceptions about it, just give it a chance. What's the worst that can happen? You watch it, you don't like it, you move on. But I think something that harms the industry is the outsiders who are not fans, who just constantly bash on it, never give it a chance, have tons of misconceptions about athletic ability required to be a wrestler, what can appeal to people about it, just overall how it functions. And it's all good and well to have opinions on things, but I just think that when it comes to professional wrestling, something I'm very passionate about, it's just something people should give a chance. And if you don't like it, that's fine. Move on. No harm, no foul. But I tell people all the time, it's not really what you think it is. There's a lot to learn from it. There's a lot to love about it. It's really a great industry, and it's brought me a lot of joy throughout my life, and it's something I think everyone should at least give a chance. So with that being said, I thank you all for tuning in today to The Main Event. I've been Peter Krenzer, the host today, and hopefully we'll see you next time on The Main Event.
You're listening to Watch the Media, the students and their personal podcasts on 90.3 FM KRNU.
Welcome back, everybody. You guys know what the intro music means. You are here listening to another episode of The Broken Record. My name's Bailey Landanger. I'm the host of this show. If you guys are new to the show, the reason behind the name The Broken Record is because I was given the name because of my sports takes. When I make some foolish takes, I stand by them. Even if I'm proven wrong, I'll still stand by that till the day I die. So my friends started calling me The Broken Record. Today on the show, though, we're going to talk a little bit, not so much about sports like we're usual. Now, I know. I know what you're thinking. But this Friday's podcast, Friday, November 20th, by the way, this Friday's podcast, we're gonna go a little bit lighthearted more, a little bit on the lighter side of things, and we're going to talk about something that's pretty important in my life, and that's me joining the Sigma Nu fraternity during my time here at UNL. Now, we've got a good show here for you today, because my story about Sigma Nu isn't like most fraternity stories you'll hear, and we got a lot of guests on the show today here to talk about it. We got Jared Jones, Patrick McCarthy, Bryce Oatkin, Zach Williams, Jack McCown all on deck for today to give a little bit of insight from their perspectives on helping Sigma Nu reach where they are today. But we'll start out with a little bit of background. So in 2014, the Sigma Nu fraternity at UNL got kicked off of campus due to some house code violations, and Sigma Nu all in all got suspended from campus. And
2 years later, the Nationals wanted to revamp and restart the fraternity at UNL. So they started recruiting guys like Jared Jones and Patrick McCarthy, and you're going to hear for them later in the show. And through years and years of hard work and blood, sweat, and tears from the first pledge class of the new Sigma Nu, they've turned a fraternity that was at ground level, at zero members, into a fraternity that is nearing getting their house back. And it's truly a great story if you guys have the time to listen to it today. I know it's a little bit different than the usual content here on the podcast, but it would mean a lot to me if you guys would stick around. The first guest we're going to hear from today is Jared Jones. He was the first commander of the fraternity since their rechartering. His pledge brothers all thought he was the best fit for the job, and he was happy to accept. And he's going to talk a little bit about how Nationals started up the chapter at Sigma Nu again.
The Nationals sent out a national rechartering rep, which essentially is just someone who is really good at recruiting. Will Devinny is his name. Will had access to all of those numbers. So he contacted me, asked me if I was still interested in joining a fraternity, and had a few meetings with him, and that's pretty much like the beginning, or I guess you'd say that was kind of the end of it all. That was my end of being a GEED, a independent. So then from there it was all a process of getting more guys together and going through like an official ceremony.
It's guys like Jared Jones who put in all those extra hours when nobody believed in him. Everyone thought, oh, it's just Sigma Nu, like they're not going to get anywhere. Guys like Jared and Patrick McCarthy, who we're going to hear from soon, they're the reason we are where we are today. And if you talk to them in person, they're always going to say the political answer and be like, oh, well, I couldn't have done it without these guys. But I think they need to take a little bit more credit where credit's due and pat themselves on the back when it comes to stuff like this, because we would not be here without them, and they're definitely the reason that Sigma Nu is what it is today. So next we're going to hear from Patrick McCarthy, who wrote a petition to the National Sigma Nu about why the chapter at Nebraska deserves to be back on campus where they belong.
Can you tell me a little about the recolonization of Sigma Nu?
Back in the fall of 2016, yeah. And then all the way up into February of 2019, that was what's called the recolonization process. And it was a really humbling experience because it was unlike any fraternity experience you can get on campus at the time. You know, being able to just kind of build a fraternity from the ground up, it taught me a lot about myself, and just it really made the friendships I gained in Sigma Nu even more important, because there was so much struggle that me and the guys went through. Just like I said, to create the end product, if you will. So that's my role.
So I know you like to be kind of humble about the petition and say, like, of course, couldn't have been done without a bunch of other guys, but everybody knows you kind of took the lead role in writing the petition for us to get rechartered. So can you tell me a little bit about what writing that petition to Nationals kind of felt like?
Yeah, I mean, and like, I know you're trying to get me to take credit for it, but truly, I mean, I just wrote everything. I mean, it wouldn't have been possible without the other guys actually doing. I wouldn't have anything to write about. So in total, the petition was approximately 170 pages. Now that consists, it wasn't all just writing, you know, there were some writing parts, but there was a lot of just, you know, documents, kind of screenshots, some pages even had pictures of just what we were doing. But I remember I spent a lot of times over the weekend in the library, even though, you know, a college kid doesn't want to do that. So some Saturday nights just kind of grinding away at it while also trying to balance my schoolwork. But at the same time, I never at one point felt like, man, I really don't want to be doing this right now. I'd rather be out partying. It was more like, I really just want us as a group of guys and as a chapter to succeed and get to this massive goal that we're trying to accomplish. So just, you know, being able to do that, and then, you know, I remember when I found out that we were approved for the petition was approved, I remember it was just probably one of the greatest moments I've had in recent years.
Because of the groundwork laid by those two guys, the first two presidents of the new Sigma Nu, Sigma Nu was able to blossom into what it is today. And the number one part of growing a fraternity is through recruitment, and Zach Williams is another building block of the Sigma Nu rechartering and taking that next step to become Sigma Nu. He was one of the most influential recruitment chairs that Sigma Nu has seen, and I kind of talked to him and reflected on what he did as rush chair of Sigma Nu. So the one executive position I held, other than candidate marshal, I guess, was recruitment chair, and that was probably the most work. I was in charge of spring rush, summer rush, and fall rush, and it was certainly an experience. It was a lot of work that I kind of had to put in on my own. Your podcast host here was one of my recruits, my favorite recruit, if I'm being honest.
With the Delta Eta chapter getting a house next fall, what does this mean to you?
That means the world to me, to be honest. My 4 years, we were constantly just kind of jerked around by alumni and told a bunch of things that never came to fruition. And so to see all that blood, sweat, and tears that we put in, we had a lot of ups and downs. We were up to 70 members at one time, and we were down to 25 members at one time. And there were so many moments where a lot of the guys would get together and just be like, is this even worth it? Is this whole process even worth it? And to see the work that has been laid by us and to see like where this is going is incredible to me. Like seeing that house, I can't wait to drive on campus and be able to step foot actually inside a Sigma Nu house for our chapter. That's going to be damn near an emotional moment for me.
And Zach's completely right when he says it's going to be an emotional moment for him. It's going to be an emotional moment for all the guys who put in countless amounts of hours working on something that most people would have said couldn't happen or was impossible or was a waste of time. I like to think of it as what the guys in the house are doing right now. We kind of, not say dedicating, but we're putting all this work in because we've seen the older guys, what they've been through, and they've told us the stories about everything they have to do, and we kind of take that as we're not gonna fail you. We're not gonna let all your guys' hard work go to waste, and we're gonna pick up right where you guys left off because you graduate. Just because they graduate doesn't mean the work is over or done, and that's kind of the thing I've told kind of the newer guys in Sigma Nu, is that just because we're close to getting this house, it doesn't mean that we can be done. There's always progress to be made, and when you're stagnant, that means you're not getting anywhere. You're not becoming a better fraternity on campus. You're not bettering your image if you're staying still. And that's a thing that older guys have also harped on. Like, just because we've gotten our goal doesn't mean we're done. There's always goals to be made, more goals to be had. And that's really something that's been kind of an underlying motto in Sigma Nu since I've joined. Since August, I've been living with the current commander of Sigma Nu, Grant Hallstrom, and during his presidency, he's really focused on alumni connections because the best way we're going to get our house back is through alumni donations and them helping us with the funds to get our house back. And I currently live with the man who is going to be our next commander, Bryce Oatkin, and some things he really wants to target in on while his term as president is focusing on getting our name out there more and becoming more known. Making campus know that Sigma Nu is back and we're not going anywhere. We're not who we were when we got kicked off. We're a completely new group, and he really wants to get our name and image out there to help with philanthropies, to help get our name out there with formals, so we can just start making more of a positive positive name for Sigma Nu around campus.
So can you tell me about the importance of this upcoming year for Sigma Nu, since you are the upcoming president? How big this next year is for Sigma Nu due to the chapter getting a house?
Yeah, really, what next year comes down to is going to make the difference between us being a house that's kind of in the middle of the road or one of the top tier houses on campus. As you know, as many of some know, we should, not 100%, but we should be getting a house on campus that we can live in while our house is being renovated. So if that happens for us, we're going to need to add like 15, 20 guys, and it's going to be huge for our numbers and huge for the future of the fraternity.
Where do you see the ceiling for Sigma Nu?
Oh, easily in the, I'd say the or one of the top houses on campus, and easily 80 to 100 members, easy.
And how consistently? How do you achieve that, since you're the next president?
It's all about the culture, what you believe guys, what they believe they can do, how things are run. That's all a culture thing, and that's what we have to start with and then build from there.
So now I want to talk about a little bit about what Sigma Nu has meant to me through my freshman, sophomore, and junior year of college thus far. So when I came into college, I was a very shy type of guy. I went to a high school with a graduating class of 32 people, and I had my six or seven best friends that I'd known since kindergarten, and I never really was a kind of branch out type of person. So when I graduated high school, I was only one of three people from my high school to come to UNL, and those other two guys both are in ag majors, so they live on East Campus. So I was kind of by myself for the first time in life, and when I found Sigma Nu, it really opened my eyes to what is out there in the world for a person. Like, when you're in high school, you're sheltered and you have your group and you think that's what your life is going to be forever, but college really opens your eyes to the whole world. And joining a fraternity, I can't imagine my life any different than what it is now, because Sigma Nu is just, I really grew into myself as a person during Sigma Nu. So my freshman year, when elections came around, like, I kind of kept my head down, didn't say much, didn't run for a position because I wasn't mentally ready for a time burden like that. But in my sophomore year, I ran for a recruitment chair, and I ended up winning, and sophomore year is really where I became the Bailey Landanger that I am today. I became more confident talking to people. I had to talk to a lot of incoming freshmen about the fraternity life, about Sigma Nu, and getting that opportunity to be a recruitment chair really just, it made me morph into who I was meant to be. I'm a much more confident person than what I was coming into college in the fall of 2018, and now it's fall of 2020, and I can do things that I never expected to do when I was a freshman. And now that my term as recruitment chair is kind of coming to an end, next year I'll be taking over the role of social chair for the fraternity, which means planning formals with sororities and other fraternities, and I can't imagine myself 2 years ago thinking that, one, I would have been a recruitment chair recruiting kids to join this organization, and then now, two, talking to other fraternities and sororities, planning out formals for us to do together. It really blows my mind, and without Sigma Nu, none of that would have been possible. I would probably still be that shy kid from a C2 high school in Nebraska that kept his head down and didn't really talk much to people, and I have Sigma Nu and all the guys that put in all the hard work before to thank for that, and I really can't thank them enough for what they've done for me, for Sigma Nu, and just for everyone's lives that has been affected by Sigma Nu. Next, we're going to hear from Jack McCown, who's currently a freshman here at UNL in his first semester of Sigma Nu. I personally recruited Jack. He's from my hometown of Wood River. I've known him all my life, and he's always kind of looked up to me as a big brother. He had two older sisters growing up, so I've always kind of felt like I've kind of been his big brother that he's always kind of had in life. And he saw me join Sigma Nu and saw how happy he was, and he really wanted to too. And he kind of spoke about that when I talked with him.
What has Sigma Nu meant to you in your first semester in college?
I've just met a lot more friends and connections that I probably wouldn't have had otherwise. Other than that, just pretty much friends and good time.
How do you think your semester would have gone different if you hadn't joined a fraternity and haven't met the guys you've met so far in Sigma Nu?
I would have a lot less friends here, that's for sure. And I would have been bored a lot.
What does it mean to you to be a fraternity man?
It means that I'm part of something that's greater than myself. I'm part of a whole organization that all cares about each other and is here for each other. And that's just truly special to me.
So, there you have it, listeners. That is the story of Sigma Nu and kind of a little bit of summary of how Sigma Nu came to be and the path that it's going on now. You heard from some of the guys who are now alumni. You've heard some current members, and you heard a new member who's in his first semester as part of the fraternity. I want to thank you guys all for listening. Next week, we'll get back to the sports talk. We're going to wrap up week 11 in the NFL. Get back to that next week. Thank you guys for listening once again. I'm Bailey Landanger, and you just listened to the Broken Record Podcast.
Thanks to Bailey Landanger, Peter Krenzer, and Brent Bartels for sharing with us their personal podcast today on Watch the Media. I'm John Schrader.